Mostly when people get called, usually they know something weird is going on. And this one takes a while.
This is Chapter, Verse, and Season, a lectionary podcast from Yale Bible Study. Join us each week as two Yale Divinity School professors look at an upcoming text from the Revised Common Lectionary. This episode, we have Joel Baden, professor of Hebrew Bible and director of the Center for Continuing Education, and Andrew McGowan, dean of Berkeley Divinity School at Yale and McFadden professor of Anglican Studies and Pastoral Theology. They're discussing 1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, which is appointed for the second Sunday after the Epiphany in year B. The text is read for you by liturgical minister of Marquand Chapel, Michael Liebenau McAlintel.
1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 1 through 10. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord under Eli. The word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down in his room. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called, "Samuel, Samuel." And he said, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. The Lord called again, "Samuel." Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel again, a third time. And he got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go, lie down. And if he calls you, you shall say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Now the Lord came and stood there, calling as before, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening."
So Joel, this story of the call of Samuel, I think, is probably fairly familiar. And it's one of a number of stories in the Hebrew Bible and beyond in which people are called by God to some particular task through a sort of an experience of divine revelation. But it's got some distinctive elements too, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of these call narratives are pretty famous. You can, you know, Ezekiel's vision of the chariot and Isaiah's vision of the throne and the seraphim and the coal on the lips. And of course, Moses at the, you know, at the burning bush. These, you know, prophetic call narratives can be some of the more famous and recognizable scenes. This one among them, but you know, an odd one. Mostly when people get called, I mean, the first part, usually they know something weird is going on, and this one takes a while. And the other thing is, this one, unlike many, seems to be purely auditory rather than visual. Right? Moses sees a bush. God appears in person to the patriarchs, to Abraham, to Jacob, etc. Obviously, you know, Ezekiel and Isaiah have these famous visions. But the first thing this text says is, visions weren't so common back at this point in time, which actually, you know, is weird. It's like, as if there's some like vision interregnum between...
It also says the word of the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were not widespread. Is that sort of a poetic parallelism thing? Sort of, you know, word and vision perhaps?
Yeah, it is. And that explains, you know, certainly why, I suppose, it's meant to explain why Samuel has no idea what's going on. But it also says, you know, that Samuel, you know, had not yet... The word of the Lord had not yet been... He didn't yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. And that, again, like, that's a statement in two parts. Mm-hmm. He didn't know the Lord, and the word of the Lord hadn't been revealed to him. Mm-hmm. Unclear exactly. I mean, the second one's fairly obvious. Mm-hmm. Not so clear what the first one means.
Right. Now, If I recall, that we don't get this provided in the text, but this is taking place at the shrine at Shiloh, isn't it? Is that right? We haven't got to Jerusalem yet as far as as the presence of the Lord's concerned. And yet, one thing that occurs to me when you mention those other calls as well is that a lot of them involve quite strong cultic contexts. Mm-hmm. So this is actually happening in the temple. Mm-hmm. And it might be that even though, generic spirituality has people thinking, oh, well, you know, I heard the voice of God when I walked by the ocean or whatever it is. That's not really the thought world here, is it? This is sort of more likely to be happening because Samuel and Eli are both in the temple, right?
I absolutely think so. You're right. Many of these call narratives, you know, Isaiah's vision is in, you know, Isaiah's vision of God is
like of a temple, isn't it?
Enthroned in the temple. Ezekiel's vision, probably somewhat similar, even though it's a little bit more obscure. You know, Moses at the burning bush, that's Sinai.
Right.
That is where the deity is. Mm. And so in a sense then, it's interesting, right, that Samuel is lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. So, you know, he's like in the bedroom next door.
Right.
And it's, you know, he hears the voice and he kind of just goes to the wrong room. He's like, oh, that must be Eli. He turns to the right instead of to the left, right? Mm. out of his own room, whatever it might be. Mm. But I do think that's important. It reminds us, as you say, that in ancient Israel and the ancient world more generally, they created intentional space for divine encounter. Mm-hmm. Right? There was a place where that would happen,
right? And often happens when people are sleeping too, doesn't it? At least it does in Greek sources. I remember this, that people go to temples to do what they call incubation. You know,
right.
Literally they expect that the dreams that they have were in those contexts will involve divine revelations that then have to be interpreted. This isn't quite that, I realize.
But it's in the same thought world. It's not so different from Jacob at Bethel, right? Lying down, right, having the dream of the the holy site, and that being actually the rationale for the creation of the sanctuary in that spot.
Right.
These are places of numinous encounter.
Yeah, and you've already referred to this issue of sensory, the sensory dimension of this. So, what do you make of this? The word of the Lord was rare; visions were not widespread. And then Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim, so he could not see, is lying down. And then Samuel hears the Lord. You've already linked this sort of contextually to the fact that we're told this was a bit of a dry spell for revelatory activity. Do you think, for instance, that the emphasis upon the auditory nature and the word of the Lord for Samuel is a part of his own narrative? Because, of course, he's going to be a prophetic figure who's, I think, I mean, to correct me, but his activity isn't so much like Ezekiel's of having, you know, grand visions, but of actually, here's the word of the Lord, you know, pay attention. Is that sort of propositional aspect being hinted at here, that this is the beginning of a career of telling people important things that God has said?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we should point out, by the way, that, you know, the Eli can't see and Samuel hears is also a very obvious play on Samuel's name, which is, you know, in Hebrew, right, Shmu El, right, literally hearing God.
Right.
But I do wonder in that case, there's, you know, to say that Eli couldn't see, is that a trend? Is that to say, but Samuel can hear?
Mm-hmm.
Are they thinking about two different, as you suggest, two different modes of the prophetic experience?
Mm.
And it's not, you know, sure, someone like Ezekiel or these great, you know, people who see visions and then describe them. Samuel isn't that kind. Samuel's also not like Elijah. He's not out there performing miracles willy-nilly to, you know, demonstrate. Samuel's not fighting against foreign, you know, prophets of foreign deities. Samuel is, as you say, really more of a kind of direct mouthpiece.
And with a sort of political dimension too, isn't he? He's sort of on the cusp of the judges and the other prophets.
Samuel is like the last judge and almost the first formal prophet.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Not that there aren't prophetic figures before this, you know, even, I mean, someone like Deborah, who is also like someone like is a judge and a prophet.
Mm.
But Samuel is inaugurating, he's just a transitional figure altogether, right? He's between prophet and judge. He's between judge and king.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the political prophetic role of, like, you know, the person who has the ear, who hears from God and then especially says to the king, you're doing something wrong,
right?
Or here's what you should be doing. That role seems to almost always be more about, hearing and transmitting the word of God, then seeing visions and interpreting them.
Is you mentioned the word play in effect on the Shmuel Samuel thing. This may be a bridge too far, but is there also at least a hint of humor about Samuel being called by God and then going to talk to someone named Eli?
Yeah.
You know, and wrong my God or something like that. Yeah.
I like that. It never occurred to me. I think it's, I think that Samuel's name is being played with ironically here, that, you know, the guy who hears God hears, but yeah, as you say, misses the God part for a while. Mm. And it is the person named Eli, my God, who has to tell him it's actually Eli.
This is incidental, but another thing I love about this story is the very folkloric feel, you know, the rule of three.
Oh, yeah.
Things have to happen three times, mm-hmm. Which is not uncommon in biblical story, but also in others.
I mean, what's funny is Eli actually doesn't get it at first either, right? It takes three times for Eli also, right? Samuel goes to Eli, and the first couple of times they're like, I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And there's this gradual revelation to the reader, right? The Lord says, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel gives the right response, right? Samuel says, here I am, right? That's the traditional prophetic response to the call. It's Abraham, Moses, right? Hineni is this classic statement. He says, here I am, and then runs to the wrong room. And then the second time we as the readers, right, it's explained to us, mm-hmm. right? God calls again, and he goes to Eli, and then the text says, now I'm going to tell you why he can't figure this out. Right? He had no idea, right? It was his first time. He never knew. And Eli also still doesn't know. And the third time, Eli figures it out as sort of like the stand-in for the reader.
Yes. Okay.
He's like, sorry, I know what's actually going on here.
Right. Go back and build your house of bricks this time.
No, that's exactly it, right? Yeah. To your point, right? It is a story that is both high and low in these wonderful ways. It is, I mean, call narratives are, you know, sort of like pinnacle narratives of prophetic texts. Mm. And this one is done, you know, I think it's obviously supposed to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got, I mean, both in its sort of structure and in the pun, it's a funny little story.
Mm-hmm. And yet it lands, if for those who finish reading at verse 10, some may read longer, but it lands at a lovely place at the end of verse 10 where he just says, speak, for your servant is listening.
Yeah.
And it in a subtle but quite profound way, I think, it draws the point you made earlier about vision and hearing together. This is going to be about speaking now. Speak, your servant is listening.
Thanks for listening. For a transcript of today's episode and lots more, check out yalebiblestudy.org. Chapter, Verse, and Season is a production of the Center for Continuing Education at Yale Divinity School. It's produced by creator and managing editor Joel Baden, production manager Kelly Morrissey, associate producer Aiden Stoddart, and I'm your host and executive producer, Helena Martin. And our theme music is by Calvin Linderman. We'll be back with another conversation from Chapter, Verse, and Season.